Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos of Baltimore. We are Baltimore positive, positively into the other side of the bye week when you're 1-5 and got a game against the Bears on Sunday, got a game against the Miami Dolphins next Thursday night. I got crab cakes to eat. I'm going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery with our friends. I have the Raven Scratch Offs. This has been a luckier edition than 1-5, I assure you. And we'll be giving these away at Costas on Wednesday this week. And then we're doing breakfast next Tuesday at State Fair, sort of between the two games. And Alan's going to come out. We're going to talk World Series. We're going to talk baseball. We're going to talk who the Orioles manager is going to be, who the Orioles pitchers are going to be, and all of that stuff. This guy is a Chicago legend. He has become a friend of mine through the by and by, I guess, of my sporting news radio days and my one-on-one sports and my Aparicio last name on the south side of Chicago, where it got me a lot of things, on the north side where it got me booed back to the south side. Rick Tellender is, I don't even know where to begin. Sports Illustrated, Chicago Sun-Times, Illinois Sports Writer of the Year 8 times. He's in the Hall of Fame for sports writing and sports media excellence and all that stuff. But more than that, he's like a nice guy and a pen pal all these years later that still writes me notes, handwritten notes like Stedman. He sends
Jesus.
me books with Steve Trout without even knowing my 1979 history with Steve Trout and
No,
the
I don't know
79
that.
Orioles.
No.
And how are you? You look
I'm
great.
great. I'm great, Nestor. You're right. I've watched you grow through the years. I've become an old man, so it's kind of cool, you know? Here we go. I love it. No, I'm in Chicago. You're in Baltimore. Nothing's changed, bud.
Dude,
Nothing at all.
I've known you all of these years, and I didn't know that, I literally just Googled this before you came on. I didn't know you were drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs as a defensive back out of Northwestern. Like, I knew you played ball. I did Mike Adamley. I did the whole deal on that. And I had all these fun things because, you'll randomly text me a picture of Louis Aparicio on a baseball card that you find laying around the house. So you're.
Well, listen, Aparicio is such a great name. It's just if it flows off the tongue, nobody ever forgets the name Aparicio. So, you know, I'm surprised. Yeah, if you come to the north side, it might not be that good for you in Chicago, but certainly on the south side, you'd be like royalty,
Yeah, I
you
gotta get
know?
my jersey out and wear it like I do sometimes. This is the Heartland statue. So I broke some fun things out because, I even have my Louis Aparicio Day program that I bought on eBay. I didn't even know there was such a thing. 1970 or whatever. Vec must have.
Oh,
I
man.
mean, the history of Chicago sports and you chronicling it and me flying into it for about 5 years at the turn of the century when I was up in Northbrook screaming doing radio. And I got to find Mike North this week. And I miss Chet Kopick so much as a personal
Oh,
friend. And
man. Chet, larger than life. You know, it's interesting. He has a daughter who works with my daughter, and my daughter has a fitness thing in Evanston, and it's like her best friend. And I didn't know because her name is different because she married. And I had drawn a little kind of funny cartoon of Chet when he died tragically in a car wreck. And he's got a fur coat on, he's got rings on, all that stuff. He's holding a microphone. It was just kind of a joke, but and I had put it online. It was RIP Chet. You know, it's sorry, Chet's gone. I put it, I don't know, maybe I texted it to somebody. Anyhow, this girl, his daughter, had found that somehow. And I'm like, oh my God, she got a hold of me. She was like, you know, in tears. And I met her, beautiful young lady, and I found the original little cartoon. And I sent it to her. I put it in a frame and sent it to her of her dad. And she just loved it. Anyway,
No, there's
Chet's.
not anyway. We can't get off of this because I love Chet too much. And I got to tell you, man, I work with Chet, and Chet was a legend to me. All of you were, even Mariotti, even though I grew to a little apart with him as a coworker. But I landed in the middle of Jordan going out and winding up in Washington, right? The Bears and McMahon and Ditka was larger than life and the fridge. Peyton had just paid, the Chicago I found were the Blackhawks and Wirtz pissing on the community, not putting the games on TV while the Bulls were larger than life. Reinsdorf controlled baseball. You got two teams. The Cubs are never going to win. Nobody knew who Eddie Vedder was, right? The White Sox were like the little engine that could, and they built the stadium that was no good, and there nobody wanted to go there, and even though the elotes are delicious, and I'll always I got this out for you, Rick. It's my 1969 Chicago White Sox belt buckle.
Sweet.
Yeah, so
Sweet,
I, you know,
yeah.
Bill Melton kind of, Goose Gossage, Wilbur Wood kind of era. So I'm such a fan of sports, and my last name bought me this ticket in Chicago that I was unaware of. When I showed up, the guys like you would talk to me and be kind to me, but Chet Kopic did weekends at the radio station, and he was this towering figure, and all of his relationships with Andre the Giant and wrestlers and the circus and rock stars and anything I ever needed in Chicago, Chet would be mad at me if I didn't ask him for a favor. And I mean, I loved him so. So if your
You know,
daughter and his
Chet, I
daughter,
mean,
I got to
he
get all of you on. We all ought to go out for like pizza one night or something. We'll go up to Ravinia.
I'm not a deep dish guy, but sure, pizza anytime. You know, thinking of Chet, who would wear a big fox fur coat? And he was a big guy, 6'5", whatever, and talk like, hey, here we are at the big barn on Madison Street. They're about ready to tee it off, and I'm with my best friend in the world, Nestor Aparicio. You know, everybody could mimic Chet because he was just like, you couldn't believe he was like a carnival barker, like a showman, like an auctioneer. And his heart was just gigantic underneath all that. He helped so many people. It was really sad to see. You know, I listened to a guy my age, you start seeing him go, it's pretty sad, but especially the way he did in a car wreck, you know.
Well, I really appreciate the fact that anytime I pick up and drop a dime on you, wherever you are, you send pictures from wherever you're. Tell me about this book, and then we'll talk some Bears. We'll talk
Sure.
some. I got my little Bears belt buckle out for you, and we'll do some ancient history and play some reindeer games here about Chicago. But your book and Steve Trout and Steve Trout's weird relationship with me, and it involves him pitching against the Orioles in 1979. But I met him one time in life. I met him. Like signing autographs at the Cubs, brand new place, not the old place, the new one, right when
Now.
they built it out in Arizona. And it was a whole bunch of Billy, it was a whole bunch of celebrities, legends in a tent. And he was one of them. And give me this story, the magic ball, baseball myth, legend, and the power to stir a kid's imagination, says Bob Costas. You're doing kid stuff, Rick, huh?
Well, listen, it started with Steve Trout. I remember he was a Cub, he was a White Sox, and he was also a Yankee. He and his dad, Dizzy Trout. Now, Steve is a left-hander, so you know already you got somebody's a little nuts, right? You're a left-handed pitcher. It's just the way it goes. His dad, if you have the name Dizzy Trout, you know that you're a little different too. But between the two of them, they have the second most wins in baseball, major league history for a father and son tandem. I can't remember who number one is, Negroes or somebody, you know, like that. But Steve had come, we would talk through the years, and he's always been like an inventor. He comes up with different ways to for kids to throw pitches so that they can see the strike zone. He'll have Day-Glo painted home plates. He has pillows with White Sox logos on it, things you can use for your head when you're on an airplane. He
Sort of
just
like
keeps
Bill
coming.
Lee, but a little different, but from Chicago.
I mean, you know, yeah, baseball player, but he also writes, and he's through the years he's written some kids' books. And this last one, he came to me and he asked me, you know, about it, if I could help or do something. And I said, he wasn't done with it yet. And I said, well, I was helping him. We were talking about stuff. And I said, why don't we do the book together? The premise is, and it's his idea, it's a great one, this magic ball, and we want to do a series of them. It's really cool. This magic ball came from somewhere, and you don't know where. And this kid finds it, and it changes his life. And then he passes it on. And at the end of the book, you find out where the magic ball came from. And we don't tell anybody yet because it's kind of a mystery, but it can talk. And it's like shocks the hell out of this little kid. So I'd say if you're anywhere from 12 to age 8, and you can read maybe 13 down to 9, something like that, it's a great book. It's got a lot of moral lessons, a lot of interesting stories that Steve came up with. We worked back and forth. You know, we'd meet up and I would do the writing and he would have these ideas, and it was really a collaboration. I tell you what,
Do you
if
want
you
me to
start
give
reading,
this to a kid who's about 7 years
it's
old that
kind of
loves
shiny. Hold it
baseball?
down. hold it down
Yeah,
or
there you go,
tilt it
right
a
there. Is
little.
that good?
Yeah, there you go.
That's it right there.
Yeah, tilt it. Yeah, it was kind of shiny. That's it. There's a tornado. The tornado's got something to do with this. We don't know at the beginning, but Bob Costas liked the book and he wrote that quote about it. So it's you read it in a half hour,
Yeah, it's
Nestor.
a
It's
cute
I
little
think.
book. It's not like my book. People pick it up and they're like, I ain't read no
Yeah.
books, so
I
this could be a
think
starter book.
you're a kid at heart. You'll like this book. I tell you, read it. You'll get a real chuckle. I mean, you'll think, oh yeah, I got to see what this what's going to happen with
Well,
this magic ball and this
I
kid.
have, especially in the era of banana ball, right, with
Oh
kids
yeah.
and stuff, the bananas came here this summer, and I'm not wearing my Curio Wellness. They're a cannabis company and Foreign Daughter, they're my sponsor. And Wendy, her, she's a chief cannabis officer, chief brand officer for us here, and educating us. But she came on the show, and her boy loves baseball so much. Reminds me of me. Like when I see him, he tells me the score, who pitched, who hit a home run, how guys are doing, what the manager should be doing with kids in the line. The kid's like 6 years old, 7 years old. So this is like that. I'm thinking this is the gift for that kid, right?
Yeah,
Literally, right?
when boys, and I would say girls too, and we have at the beginning of there, this is for everybody who plays baseball and everybody who does not. It's something that happens to boys particularly, and girls too. When they start to understand numbers, they start to understand the game of baseball, and they can actually talk to their dad or their mom or their buddies about it because the numbers start to make sense. A hit, a pitch, scores, the way the bases work, the
My dad taught me
intricacies.
math, 250
It's
batting average. If Louis was batting 250 when I was 5 years old, that wasn't as good as 313. You know what I mean? Like literally. And dividing by nine for, I mean, just understanding ERA was complex for an 8-year-old. It is.
It really is. And then, you also have baseball cards. I don't know if kids still get them, but we used to. I had a Louis Aparicio card, and I would just look at it. And you'd take it out and look at it, read the back of it, read the stats,
So this is a
pronounce the name.
56. This is the Louis rookie right here. This is autographed by Louis. I
My
say to my
God.
wife, right? So this is on the back.
Oh,
Louis
yeah.
took me drinking
Sure.
one day when I was 18 down at the Belvedere in the summer of 86, and he signed all of the cards. Here's my 57, Louis, that's autographed as well. So I'm with you, man. This was my And I've managed to hobby it out to having these weird belt buckles of my childhood and my rock and roll buckles, but that's all I collect. I collect Aparicio stuff and small stuff, not stuff that's big in posters and artwork or whatever, just knickknacks, little things. But there is something that tethers us to this, whatever it is, like whatever your childhood is, even though you've had this amazing life as a sports writer or whatever, there's something about the 59 Go-Go Sox that probably
Oh
really
God.
whet your appetite, right?
Just, I remember the All-Star cards that they had. If you were an All-Star in like 1958, 59, 60, 61, when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, and they would be red with stars and one was blue with
You
stars.
mean these right here, like this right here?
Well, there's another one that actually
Hold
had
on,
like
I'll find it. I'll find the 59.
Hank
Yeah, I know
Aaron
what you're
was on
talking
it.
for.
There were guys like Red Shandies, Wally Moon. I love those names. You just say the names over and over again. Let's
62.
see.
You like a 62
Yeah, there
wood
you go.
panel? There you
Yes,
go.
yeah.
All right. See, I'm going through my collection here. That's why I brought it out, because I knew you would love it, Rick.
I had a collection. It's one of those sad stories. My mom probably threw it out.
Oh,
I wish I
hell.
had it. It would be, I'd have it all over the
This is where
walls
you
and
need to tell
stuff.
me she did some good things too, right?
Yeah. No, it's baseball is a fascinating game that way. I remember talking with Theo Epstein, after he, well, as he was building the Cubs, they hadn't won the World Series yet. And we were talking about baseball, and I said, baseball is just, it's kind of a simple game. He said, oh God, no. Oh no. I mean, he was dead serious. He's like, it goes on and on and on. And he's right. There were some plays. How about that play in the Milwaukee game where the ball bounced, hit the wall, hit his glove, hit the wall, bounced back, and nobody on base knew what to do, whether it was an out. I don't know if you saw that play. It ended up being a double play for the Brewers. Even the Brewers didn't know exactly what had happened. An infield fly rule is so complicated. Like, did you try to catch the ball? Does the guy in first need to advance? All these things that go into a little kid's mind, go through an adult's mind, because the rest of the game is so simple. You pitch it, you hit it. It's either a hit or an out. But then you get into the details of it. Oh my God, it just, it can warp your brain. And I think it's one of those things that, like, forever, you never forget your connection with the beginnings of the sport for you as a kid, particularly. I got a friend who's got a 10-year-old son. I think he just turned 10. He's into baseball like a little baby is into a teething ring, or like a drug addict is to heroin. He's so into it. He knows everything and he loves it, and he watches it with such ardor, I guess. And he plays the game. He's in a travel team, so everything he does, he projects onto the screen and vice versa. And it's a magical time for him. He was a Cub fan. And I told his dad, I said, well, poor little guy has not had his heart broken yet, which is, I mean, that's essential to being a Cub fan. So he got it this year. He thought the Cubs were going to win the World Series. Sorry, son.
I'll get to the Bears in a minute. Rick Tellender is here from the legendary Windy City, Chicago, where I made half a home for half a while, half a century ago. At least it feels that way. I must ask you, as this World Series begins, because the Toronto Canadian part of Canada versus the U.S., which is way baked into this thing, and L.A. and how they beat the Yankees and Trump and all, everything that bakes into this, but Ohtani. And I mean, nothing against Vladdy or Springer's pursuits, or paint this any way you want to paint it. But the Ohtani achievement last week of pitching 6 innings of 10 strikeout, 1-run ball, and hitting 3 home runs in a National League Championship Series game. My dad played like street ball against Pete Gray, right? Back in the day, right? Okay.
The one-arm guy.
The one-arm guy, the kids, okay? So my dad, 1919, Scranton, Pennsylvania, played against Pete Gray. My dad went and saw Babe Ruth play on the train to New York City at the old Yankee Stadium when my dad was a boy, right? So, and I have this Aparicio baseball name, and like whatever the things I've witnessed, I was there the night Joe Carter hit the home run in Toronto. I've seen 52 World Series games in person or something. You've probably seen 100 and whatever because you traveled forever. So you were at these moments where these things happen, right? Whatever, no hitters. I've walked out of a couple. I haven't been to one or whatever. But I mean, I've seen the Yankees win the World Series at Yankee Stadium several times. I saw George Bush throw out the pitch after night. I've seen crazy stuff. But on an achievement level, to me, Jim Abbott's number one. I will never see that. To me, the Jim Abbott thing, I don't even know what the hell how that happened. And then there's the Bo Jacksons and the two sport people that are freaky. But the Ohtani thing of pitching and hitting at this level, from a baseball perspective, I don't even know where to put it, and you're a little older than me. Where do you put it?
There's a lot of substance to say that it's the greatest single athletic performance ever because it entailed pitching and hitting. And I guess you have to go back to Babe Ruth, who was, a great hitter, obviously, also a good pitcher. Now, it's way before my time. I don't know how great a pitcher he is. I haven't studied the stats or how many home runs he might have hit while pitching. But, in a lot of games now, the pitchers don't come to bat. So, that's it. You're never going to see a pitcher bat. What Ohtani did is just so bizarre. But you bring up Jim Abbott, and I wrote a I spent a lot of time with Jim Abbott. Wrote a story for Sports Illustrated that didn't run, and I couldn't figure out why for years and years. It's because of the baseball strike. Nothing won because that was shortly after he threw a no-hitter. Missing a good part of his hand and the way he had to do his glove. Astounding performance. What a nice guy he is. What a great guy. No, just fabulous human being. His wife was terrific too. I went to their house in Greenwich, went with him, and they're sitting there and they're both sitting there reading books. He's reading Hemingway and she's reading some novel. I mean, it was just wonderful. I really like him. So you bringing him up is a great thing. But just back to sheer athletic performance and skill. I guess you'd have to say the only thing to be equivalent would be somebody in football who's playing, maybe like Travis Hunter, if he can be a great wide receiver and a great defensive back, because you usually only play one side of the game. Ohtani playing pitching so well. I mean, that's great. 10 strikeouts, one hit, I mean, one run, but three home runs is like nuts in any game ever. And to do the two things together, you really have to scramble to try to think of something that might have been more transcendent. I tell you the truth, I can't really. I mean, there's people who've done like great running back jobs, great quarterbacking jobs, coming back from being down, people who've done track and field, amazing things. But this showing both sides, the skill, full skill set, I don't know.
Deion Sanders has turned into such a carnival barker and such a
Yeah.
weird character that it takes guys our age to really sit and scratch your head and say, "Hold on, dude. Dude played defensive back, was the
Yeah.
greatest ever. He
Yeah.
returned punts and kicks,
Yeah.
might have been the greatest ever. Would have been a wide receiver if he wanted to have been a pretty damn good one. Might not have been Jerry Rice, but it would have been Jerry pretty good." Oh, and then he would go and like play in the World Series for the Reds or the Braves and hit 289 and hit 20 doubles and steal 42 base. We don't think of him like that. We think of him as this the NFL
Yeah.
Network thing. It jumped the shark like Fonzie for me, Rick. But Bo Jackson too, and having it taken away from him. Hey, look, Brian Jordan, right, who played for the Falcons and played for the Cardinals, didn't do it but
Yeah.
did it at an all-pro kind of level, not a Hall of Fame level. Those are amazing things, but
Yeah,
pitching and hitting, Rick, you are a real athlete, man. Every little league, Mark Karolkowski, with my little league, great, best player in the league. He's a pitcher and a hitter. He played shortstop, played every manager's kid, played third base or shortstop and pitched until they were 15 or 16 or 8 to whatever. I don't know why. Like M Mike Mussina, who was a really good hitter and played for the Orioles, and to your point, never got to show anything till he interleague play. Got a hit the first time I think he might have given off of Smoltz in Atlanta. And he and his brother would always make the case, because Mike was recruited to be a kicker by Joe Paterno at Penn State, who ended up
Quicker.
being, yeah, he was a kicker and a defensive back like you. Defensive back. He was a fast white guy. Stanford recruit. He could have walked on and played football at Stanford. But the thing with Messina, he didn't get the hit, but Messina might have been able to hit 242 and be a second
Probably.
baseman too. You know what
Sure.
I mean?
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
if he would have wanted to do
Oh,
that, or
yeah.
like
The
I and I guess others
specialization.
could have, but like nobody has, and maybe it's the Japanese thing too, Rick, really.
Yeah, it may be, I think it's certainly coming from that culture where they felt it's okay, because I doubt he would have been allowed to here. This may sound stupid, but I got to ask you, Nestor, what are the rules now in both leagues for when, for pitchers, for designated hitters and pitchers for hitting? Who hits, when would a pitcher not even hit in a game, right? He's a pitcher.
I guess if you run out of guys on a bench or designated hitter, or you can't put them back in, I
Well, the
mean.
regular lineup, though, if you have nine batters and there's a DH instead of the pitcher, right?
Could you substitute the pitcher to bat, you mean?
Well, I mean, say he pitches nine innings, he'd never come to bat, right? If there's a DH.
Well, I mean, listen, for every Pedro Martinez or every Bob Gibson or every Don Drysdale or whatever, there's a whole side of that argument in regard to the violence in the game and coming inside. And I mean, we could go all day on baseball too, but I hate you about the Bears, believe it or not, because like
Sure.
we're
Ah,
one in five
Bears.
here, dude. I mean, like this is really tough because our baseball team a mess, all that. But I would just say for Chicago, the fact that the Bears can't get up and move 40 years later now, and 40 years since Sweetness and you covering the Bears, that's an amazing thing, like the Orioles at 42 years,
Yeah.
or even the Blue Jays at 32 years.
Yeah. Hey, you got to suffer, Nestor. It's part of being a fan. But I mean, look at it seemed like the Ravens are on their way to becoming a dynasty. And people saying, well, maybe it's time for Harbaugh to go. He's been successful. He's been there too long. All those things start to come up, and it's basically because it seems to me, and I haven't followed the Ravens that closely, because your quarterback got hurt, right? I mean, isn't that like 90% of it?
It's 90% of your chance of winning when you get 3 points in 60 minutes, and Tom Brady's,
Yeah.
making fun of your operation on national TV and just saying like, What was there a backup plan? Cooper Rush. I mean, it hasn't. It's really exposed the backups of the Ravens and maybe their draft a little bit and where they've spent their money on aging
So
players.
you
And
blame the front office for this kind of mess?
they the offensive and defensive lines aren't stout enough, and I think that that's going to be their that is their downcoming. I mean, they
Ravens have
can't rush
always
the
been
quarterback.
known for their defense. I mean, it's
Yeah.
just always been it, the defense. But
They
then
spent
with
money on your guy Roquan and Matt Ibike and Marlon Humphrey,
Roquan
and it has
Smith
to
is a good,
work.
Jackson is just he's such a dynamic quarterback. I remember when he came out of it was out of Louisville, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and people said, well, he's not going to be able to run like that because we watched him in college and said, oh, it's Louisville, it's not Ohio State. He did the same thing, and when he is active and he doesn't have a quick release, he's got I kind of like it. It's a fluid, slow kind of passing thing, but when he's on, he's really great. And of course, his running ability is just astounding. And the whole key in the NFL with all these more and more great athletic quarterbacks, you can run, but you got to be careful you don't get killed. And you better slide before they hit you. And you better, just hope that one of these 400-pound guys doesn't fall on you. So it's always very dangerous. And that can bring us me around to what's happening right now with Caleb Williams in the Bears. He seems a little out of sorts. This last game was a very bad one, even though they won. He had his lowest quarterback or passer rating of the season. He's a very, swift athlete. He's like Patrick Mahomes. He's not as good as Lamar Jackson, clearly. But it seems like he's afraid to run. They've told him, just don't do it because you're going to get hurt. And one play, I was just counting, to myself. I counted 10 seconds he's running around before he threw the ball. I mean, it's just here, all over the place. And you'll see Mahomes do stuff like that, but then he'll
Tarkenton.
complete, Oh my God. Now you're going back. Jesus,
It's
God
well,
almighty.
extending the play is what they do. Rick, I've got to go because I've got another thing. I want to promote your book. I love Rick
Well, we'll
Tellender.
get
I will
Steve
have you
Trout.
on anytime. I will get to Chicago. You're one more excuse for me to get out there and get some Pequod's pizza because they don't dump the sauce in the middle. They do it the right way up
That's
there.
right.
Steve Trout, along with Rick Tellender, the magic ball, baseball myth, legend, and the power to have to stir a kid's imagination, and very easily available. If you need to find it, find me. You won't get a nice little handwritten note from Rick on the inside the way I did, but and I am going to gift this to Wendy's kid. Max, you got a gift. Hey, I appreciate you, and we got to get pizza together for
All
real,
right, and
100%.
crabs, crab cakes.
I'll bring them with me. I'll mule them
Okay.
out. You let me know.
All right.
I'll bring them from all my sponsors and let you do a Chicago taste test.
right,
And
sounds
I'll do it
great.
on the coldest day in hell in Chicago, is what I'll do always.
Oh.
Because it's always cold as hell in Chicago. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Be colder in Baltimore if we're 1-6 on Sunday night. I promise you that.